With our farms and distributors, I mean, they were sort of bringing their own demand onto the platform to a large degree. And we tried different initiatives, but couldn't get it right. Couldn't get the cost right. Couldn't get the retention on the member right. Just like working with our partner farms. So that's why we were scale capped, right? Because I couldn't figure out a way to generate a demand for the farmers before having our own distribution center.
Hello and welcome to the Gross Profit Podcast. My name is James Kennedy. I'm the co-founder and CEO at procurementexpress.com. We take the hassle out of managing your company's purchasing with magical features, but we're not here to talk about that today. Instead, I've got my longtime friend. I've met Simon 10 years ago, and since then, he's been a longtime friend, business hero, all-around good guy. When I met him, he ran a mythical, magical software business that deposited healthy amounts of cash into his personal bank account every month, and he was the guy I wanted to be. He seemed to have it all wrapped up and had nothing left to do in life. 10 years later, things have changed dramatically. Life was obviously way too easier. He's a man who has grown a business, which you're going to hear about in a few minutes, to a large extent, and I would wager his life is significantly more complicated. In this episode, we're going to discuss a bit about the finance challenges that he has come across as he's grown this business and the needs that he's going to have into the future, as well as the mission that he is driven by. So, Simon, thanks very much for coming along today. Maybe you could just introduce yourself to the audience, give us a bit of background, tell us where you are in the world.
So I'm calling in here from Pittsburgh, PA, so Western Pennsylvania, and you call it the Gross Profit Podcast, and our profit is delicious profit. So what we do is we now, for our customers, we're a grocery store, we're an online-only grocery store, and we deliver direct to our customers, and we buy from local farms and producers and deliver direct to door. And so that's really what the business has turned into. And as you mentioned, I've had this mission my whole career that I believe that local farms and producers should feed local people, and that, you know, our lives are better both on the producer side, but also on the consumer side. It's just a great experience to like eat really good bacon or have really good eggs from a local farm. And these are hard things to access. And so we really need to make that easier for consumers to access. And that's what will actually grow this local food economy. And so, yeah, that's a little bit of an overview.
So let's go back to the beginning. When I met you 10 years ago, what were you doing and why were you running that business?
I've been in business for 17 years. So I started in 2006 and I started a SaaS business. I don't know if it was even called SaaS at that time. At that point, I built websites for farms, basically. So obviously things have really changed a lot. But at that point, I was working on farms like right after college, and I had a programming background and sort of knew I could build something that would make it really easy for a farmer to have a website so that they could connect to their local economy, their sort of like people in their local area. And they would hire a, you know, local web developer or something, and they would spend $2,000 or $3,000 or $4,000 to get a website going. I'm like, I can do that for cheaper. And so that was the really original thing. And obviously started with this like really simple, I think that was like part of the maybe accidental genius at the beginning of the business, was just like really solve this really basic, simple problem that my customer had. And then I've sort of just like kept churning year after year on this, and it's turned into what I do today.
What brought your empathy for farmers? Why did you want to help them? They don't sound like the maybe best demographic in the world to go selling tech software to, but
right.
What was behind that?
Yes, I grew up on a farm in southwestern Pennsylvania, and we raised sheep and hay, and you know, had a big garden, and so I grew up way out in the country. My dad was a coal miner. My mom was an educator. And so the sort of farming was part-time. And so as a kid, I was definitely not interested in that at all. If you told my 16-year-old self what I'm doing today, that would be like a foreign concept. But I was like interested in programming and computers. And so I studied information science technology at college. And then I started working on farms in the summertime. And as an idealistic 20-year-old trying to figure out like what mark am I going to leave in the world, or like what are some really interesting problems to work on? For me, agriculture was this just a really interesting problem to work on, because it touches all facets of our lives. And I know, like, we don't see that, but you're eating three times a day. And so three times a day, you're dealing with agriculture. And then that touches everything else, right? It touches water use and labor issues, land use, transportation, like everything is food. The grocery market in itself is a $1 trillion market in the US, right? It's this massive industry that's sort of hiding in plain sight. And so that's sort of what it is just this idealism around, like, I think that, you know, and I started working on these small farms and these local farms and realizing, like, why are we shipping food from across the country when these farms could produce it right here and sort of like hire local people in the local community and sort of like reinvigorate these farms. One of the things that I say is like that, you know, over the last 70 years, the American food economy has been this like massive success, right? We've drastically reduced the cost of food, but we've done it by breaking the bonds of our communities, by breaking food producers away from food consumers and creating this race to the bottom. And that's what you see in a grocery store where the people who feed us don't know us. And so they do things that they wouldn't do to people they know, right? And the people that buy the food don't know the producers. And so they have no reason to care, you know, and I believe that that's had really bad effects on our bodies and our communities. And that as we start to, you know, with what Harvey's doing is like rebuilding those connections, you know, taking our customers out to like farm events and like sort of like rebuilding those communities. We can just, you know, it's like the world's just a better place when we eat like this is basically what it comes down to.
Because that's what I think of when I think of farming in the US, everywhere, I guess, these days is huge agribusinesses that are just churning out loads of corn mostly and then turning it into different types of food. And if I want to go and meet the people who grow my food, I've got to get up on a Sunday morning. I've got to drive for an hour and a half and wait around in the rain and maybe, you know, go to a farmer's market or something. So the original business of making a website makes sense, right? Okay, if my local farm has a website, I can just go purchase from the farmer directly, I guess. Why not just put a stop in it then? Why didn't that work or does it work?
It works to an extent. I mean, it's a small, that market in the US is called the local food market. You know, what we call the local food market, which is like farmers markets. It's like CSA box programs where maybe you can get a box of food from like a local farmer every week or something. That's, you know, that's still a $20, that's a $20 billion business in the US, right? In a market, in a $1 trillion market, right? So it's a very small piece of that overall market. So it is happening, right? But it's like you say, it's not convenient. It doesn't really work either for the farmers or the consumer, right? Even if that farmer's market that you talked about exists, for the farmer, that's very difficult too, right? They often end up losing a lot of money on that as well. And so, you know, like the problems come from both sides. But I sort of realized with Harvey, is that we needed to make it easier for the consumer, the customer, the member to access this food. And that's really what Harvey is about and is sort of a reinvention of my work starting about 7 years ago is how do we make this really easy? How do we make the local food economy easy? And if we do, we're going to grow it. And it's turned into everything that I do today, which is sort of all the home delivery and all that. But I, you know, we really needed to make it easy to grow it. It's sort of like key insight of Harvey. And also like, marketing, you know, also just how do we tell the story, right? There's no marketing done for local food. And now we are spending massive amounts of money on marketing local food, at least where we deliver. And so, you know, that's another piece of it that we had to build.
Okay. So what I heard there was you gave individual farmers a website, which is fine if I wanted to buy whatever, 40 kilos of potatoes at a time from the farmer, which would what it would need to be, I guess, for them to be worthwhile for them. Or if they had enough variety on their farm, maybe they can put a box together. So I'll get my carrots and spuds, as we call them over here, in a box. But then if I wanted to add in some meat or whatever, then I'm stuck. I have to go to a separate website. So tell me what Harvey is today compared to ordering directly from a farmer.
Right. I mean, that's basically the way it works is you can do, yeah, maybe you can buy a whole cow or something from a farm here at least, or something like that. But, you know, there's just problems throughout that, let alone that what I would think of as like the middle of the supply chain, which is like everything from the farm to the customer in our case doesn't really exist. It's really difficult to do or, you know, and there's just this expectation around home delivery that many American consumers have. And that makes things increasingly difficult for the farm. Like if they try to start doing that, you know, now you have this website And now you have these customers that expect it to be delivered to their door. You can't use the FedEx and the big networks because you're dealing with fresh product. It's too expensive to ship. And so you have these farmers. We have like one farmer I know who's like, now she sells 100% of her product to us. She was like driving around like a 4-hour radius and like delivering like, you know, one box an hour kind of thing. Like, why? That makes no sense. And so you really need an entity like Harvey to fulfill that middle of the supply chain, do all the inventory, do the fulfillment, do the delivery, get the density right, do the marketing right, do the technology right. And that's what we provide. And now our farms, now they come, they bring a pallet of food to us, drop it off. We take the risk on it, right? We take the inventory risk, the whole thing, and then we make it work for them. Obviously, they're getting a lower profit or a lower margin than they might at a farmer's market or whatever, but they actually have a volume, and they can concentrate on doing what they do well, and we can concentrate on figuring all the other stuff out.
So I'm starting to hear some CapEx here. You need a distribution center. So that was the first thing from your nice, clean online business. You sort of had to get your hands mucky. So what was your first step? Did you rent a building or did you buy it? Or how did you go about financing that?
3 or 4 years into Harvey, again, we tried to approach Harvey as like a more of a pure software play and sort of work with our partner farms and producers. Interestingly, I was just looking at this number. In the 7 years since we launched Harvey, we processed $121 million in payments on the platform, right? So it's like, you know, it's a significant business. But I realized a couple years in that, especially the home delivery. I think home delivery was really the break point between the old and the new version of Harvey, because I went out. So I sort of realized, this is interesting, it was like late 2019. I was calling 2020 the year of home delivery for Harvey, because we were going to figure out home delivery. So I go out to all my partner farms and I say, okay, you followed me this far. Here's what you're going to do next. You know, you've done all my crazy stuff up till now. And here's what you're going to do next. You're going to deliver to people's houses. And everyone's like, no, actually, we're not going to do that, Simon. We're cool. We don't need that. And so I had sort of like a, you know, like a 2 or 3 month long business existential crisis of, oh, like I'm actually going to have to launch my own distribution center so I can do home delivery and figure this thing out. And so that's what we did late 2019 into 2020. Interestingly, we announced it in January of 2020, and we did our first delivery March 14th, 2020. So sort of crazy how everything sort of like lined up with the pandemic. And of course, like with the pandemic, everything went crazy.
Very suspicious, I'm saying. Like, we all looked at Wuhan, but anyone check out Pittsburgh for a desperate entrepreneur keen to kickstart his fledgling business.
Yeah, exactly. The only thing I need is a pandemic.
Put it in the business plan. Unleash worldwide pandemic. Second step, profit. Okay.
And the first version of the distribution center, we were actually able to sort of sublease and got into it fairly low cost. And I kept running the software part of the business as well during that time. But over the last 4 years, I've completely flipped the business over focusing on the distribution side, because that's what's actually scalable about this thing. Working through the smaller farms and distributors just was not a scalable model. And more than anything, I think we couldn't put a marketing budget on it because it was so variable in the way that they would deliver. And so like, you know, we spend massive amounts of money on, you know, meta marketing is what meta ads. And so, okay, once I've spent $160 to acquire a customer, I got to deliver the box. It's got to be right. And, you know, it's the product mix has to be right. Everything has to be right all the way through. And there's no messing around. And so that's really why we've ended up doing this.
Initially, the idea was try and get the farmers to deliver straight to the consumer. You generate the customers for them, but then the fulfillment was an issue. So it was way too much variability on whether they do a good job on that. And the customers would come back and complain to you, not the farmer. And that was the problem. So farmers, not widely known as brilliant marketers. How did you manage to create this demand? And was that hard or easy, or how did you go about it?
It's harder than you'd think. I think that about 2 years ago, we realized we didn't really know how to systematically generate new customers for the business. And we really strip the whole thing down to the studs from a marketing perspective, and, you know, did all the, like, what you're supposed to do, all the landing page testing, how to scroll, like eye tracking to get them to scroll, you know, how do I get them to scroll down the page, get the offer right, get every piece of that right. And we really spent really 18 months. It's really 18 months of work to get our marketing funnel into a place where we can reliably generate customers at an acceptable payback period. Honestly, one of the hardest things that I've done in my career. And we just had to make a lot of difficult decisions on that to get there. We had sort of, we created a membership program. We're a membership-based service now. So our members pay $199 a year and essentially get free delivery from us. That's a big part of it. And getting like a really good cash conversion cycle on our marketing, right? So I get that $199 after 3 weeks. And so now I can, you know, that just makes the cash conversion cycle work for us. So it's extremely difficult. I mean, it's you know, like the operations and the technology are one thing, like those are difficult things, but the go-to-market strategy is what makes us special. No one else has the go-to-market that we have.
I feel like the cost of acquiring a customer, that's the magic number. If you know that, you can figure everything else out. A little bit surprised to hear you say it only in the last 2 years you figured that out, because you were going for what, 5 years before that? What was happening? You were just, it was working, but it wasn't scaling, or it was just too high?
I mean, with our farms and distributors, I mean, they were sort of bringing their own demand onto the platform to a large degree. And we tried different initiatives, but couldn't get it right. Like couldn't get the cost right, couldn't get the retention on the member right, you know, just like working with our partner farms. So that's why we were scale capped, right? Because I couldn't figure out a way to generate a demand for the farmers before having our own distribution center.
So a bit of genius there. The farmers were bringing their own market with them, which helped you get going, because marketplaces are always a two-sided thing. And I guess the promise to them was, bring us all your customers and I'll get you even more. And that second piece was, when it was an awkward silence for a while, when you figured that out before they bailed. But I guess there was other, there's the logistics benefits, there's all the other software benefits and so on that made their life easier. You mentioned that farmer who used to deliver everything by hand. What would their life be like before they started working with you, and after? What would they say is the biggest advantage of working with Harvey as a farm?
Yeah, we would help them increase their sort of per customer, you know, how much they make from each customer. So, you know, we would help them make 30 or 40% more profit from each potential customer. And that was really the pitch to them, is like, the main thing was because they would do these like box programs, like I mentioned earlier. We call them, they were called CSAs in the US. It'd be like a box from your local farm kind of thing. And they're somewhat widespread. They're in sort of every city in the US. But the main thing about them was like, they would just be a standard box. It would just be like, whatever's coming off the farm would throw it in a box and you get it delivered, which is like not a great experience, right? From a perspective of like, I want to make salad this week and all you gave me was turnips, you know, or I don't know what the. And so that was like the key first thing. That's the key thing about the beginning of Harvey, was how do you do a customizable box, right? But that gets into all these other things of like inventory management and warehouse management, fulfillment, and like a lot of things. So that was like the original thing, is like, that would be my pitch to the farmers, is that you can have a customizable farm box. And no one else was doing that at the time.
Now today, what's it look like for the consumer? Is there still I pay a subscription, so it's rings a bell, like Costco or something, I guess, is the nearest thing that sounds familiar for retail.
Costco or Amazon Prime.
Okay. And what's it look like for them? Do I have to order from one? Can I mix and match from different farms now? Or is it like a regular shopping experience?
Yeah, it's just like a grocery store, really, an online grocery store. So you just, you have one day, our customers have one day of delivery. So based on their zip code, where they live, they have one day of delivery. So it'd be like, Thursday's my day, because that's the day we're in your neighborhood, right? So Thursday you get a box, and then you shop the 3 or 4 days ahead of time, tell us exactly what you want. And then we deliver next day. So that's an important piece of the batch delivery, where I can fill up a whole truck and then I'm delivering to all the neighbors in a particular place, is really important for the economics of the business.
So let's talk a bit about how the whole thing was financed, which I'm guessing was the Bank of Simon to start off with. And then as things went on, what are the different options you looked to fund the growth of the business?
Really, mainly just funded the software out of revenue of the business, right? Certainly the building the software, we funded by selling the software. And then as we've gone along, and especially when we made the switch to this distribution model, we did do some crowdfunded debt from our customers. So I think we've raised maybe $400,000 or $500,000 through some debt. We've done various others. So really just on debt financing up till now. And now we're also doing some equity, some equity fundraising as well.
What is that equity fundraising? What's your sort of expansion plans, or what are your plans to scale the business, and why do you need to raise more money?
Yeah, it's definitely a business, you know, that needs a lot of scale to it. The margins are, you know, a lot lower than a software business. I think that's been one of the things that's been really interesting over the last 4 years, is I've had to unlearn maybe all the things that I learned when I was a software builder. I think one of the things I joke about, because it's somewhat true, is in a software business, nothing about your cost matters. And in a distribution business, every dollar matters. You know, it's like you're just scrapping for every dollar, every point of margin. It's definitely like a whole different stance that you need to take to the business, to run a business like this. We've gotten to the point where it's a scalable business. We're starting to add new markets. So we started in our home market of Pittsburgh. We just launched in Philadelphia, which is a 5-hour drive away. And that sort of that model of just delivering to remote markets allow basically 100x our market from about 1 million people to 150 million people. And so now we're just scaling that model. And we sort of have we know what the business looks like. We know what the margins are. We know how much it costs to deliver. We know, you know, how to source. Like, we know all the things, right? And we got to the point where we needed to show more ads to more people, right? And that really is the core of the business. And that's why we're fundraising, is to extend our payback period on our marketing so we can grow faster, launch more markets, build our management team. I think one thing that I've been really thinking about is that we build a business model around local food, or how local food economy should work. And now it's like, now I really need to focus as a CEO, I need to focus on building the institution that builds the business now, right? The last like 7 years have really been about building the model, but now it's like, I got to build a board of directors, and I got to, you know, build my C-suite. I got to, you know, culture becomes more important. Now we have 60 people, and 3 years, we're going to have 300, you know, like, how does that work when people don't talk to me every day? You know, like, so it's all these things of like building the institution of this business is the thing. Like, that's my next, you know, that's the next 20 years.
So who's your first sort of C-suite hire, if you like, and what did they unlock for you?
I hired a COO 3 or 4 years ago. And that's been a really important business relationship. We have the same shared vision. You know, he ran a farm for a while. He comes from a technology background. He believes the same thing that I believe about this market and what's possible. So like, we have this like very shared vision of like where we're going. And, but he's really good on the operations side, making sure things really work. And I'm really focused on like, what is next and finding those like new things within the business. What's that biggest problem in the business? And I'm sort of solving that. And so we have this really good sort of back and forth relationship. We really complement each other really well. So it's been a really important business relationship for the last 3 or 4 years, and friendship.
So you're going to get into more specialized financial needs as things move on. If you have a magic wand and you could add a skill set to your team, either upgrading your existing team or someone who could come in and help you with something, what would that magic skill set be?
I'm really thinking a lot about the finance side of it right now. We have a really massive vision for what we're doing. I believe this can be a business that does multiple billions of dollars per year in sales. I believe like that is the need in the marketplace. That is the demand is there as we scale this thing. And so we really need people that have taken a business from 10 million to 100 million and beyond, right? So we really want people who have that experience taking something that's working and scaling it. And so that's going to take fundraising. And that, you know, I think that's one area where we're pretty weak in, is how do we actually fund a business like this?
So you are a Procurement Express customer. So I have to ask you about that. After you knew I was running this business for many years, and eventually you were driven to buy the software. So what was the drive? What was the need that Procurement Express was going to help you with?
We use it mainly for PO management. And we have a pretty custom integration, I think, between our software and your software. And it sort of manages all of our buying, basically, for our program. So I'm not a user of Procurement Express myself on a daily basis, but it's really nice to be able to communicate easily to our suppliers. And that also communicates to our payments program. So it like just sort of fits that. It really fits well, sort of that PO management for us.
Yeah, I mean, I think you use our API pretty extensively, and we discussed this for a while. You were like, oh, I'm tired of building software. Surely we can integrate and we can take part of that piece away from what you've already built and integrated it in. So that was a good project for us. I like to think of the easy wins. I'm looking for easy wins that I can share with other people. So what was the thing that took you, say, a day in your business that improved it by more than a percent? I'm looking for inspiration for people who are listening here to see how they could improve their business by getting inspired what you found.
There's a lot of things, especially in a distribution business, where there's just so many pieces. There's so many optimizations that we can do. One bigger thing that we realized is, as we're looking at sort of market expansion, is we didn't have to open multiple distribution centers in each market. We could use our existing distribution center and start shipping overnight and get to those distant markets, which is way more than a 1% increase in the business, because we're able to like utilize these fixed costs we already have and just add on additional revenue onto the business. And so that was definitely like an insight that hit me all at once, and like, wow, we can do this. Yeah, we can do it that way. So
so you started in Pittsburgh, and the idea was, hey, let's go to Philadelphia. And what you thought, oh, maybe we need a distribution center in Philadelphia. That was the original plan. Go market by market, have a distribution center in each location.
Yeah, have a distribution center in each location. And we were looking at even maybe buying a distributor in that market to sort of get us up and running. But it was going to take a lot of finance, obviously, to make that happen. And so the simple approach is, and this is what food companies and distribution companies do, is it's called a line haul, basically. It's like, we fill the truck up, we take it over there, and it goes into the last mile for delivery. And so, you know, it's all very standard stuff, but I think it's not obvious until you start thinking about it, I guess, like maybe like most things.
Well, yeah, I can see like the logical thing is, well, we're going to expand into new market. Let's set the whole thing up again, replicate what's working, et cetera. And you kind of default into that. I suppose there was a hook there in local farms, et cetera. But the default thinking was, oh yeah, we're going to need to do this again. I was like, hold on, do we? We could just ship from where we are and have way more coverage.
Well, we've seen there've been multiple like large funded businesses in our space that have struggled. And usually the struggle is exactly this, where they're like, we're going to set up in San Francisco and New York and Seattle and like Chicago, you know, but that's actually not the right way to scale a business like this. I heard it said, and I think this is true, is that the costs and complexities of logistics increases by the square of distance, right? So what you actually want to do is go to the next market, right? You want to expand like this, not like this and this and this, right? So you just go like this.
Figure out what the capacity of one distribution center is, fully max that out, or I guess on the supply side as well, as long as you can manage it on the supply side.
I have no doubt we're going to have multiple distribution centers at some point, right? We'll have one in the eastern Pennsylvania, but we just do that later when we have volume, and that's fine.
So I guess if, you know, anyone's interested in this story and they think they might have something to offer, how could they reach out to you?
You can find me on LinkedIn. I think LinkedIn's probably the easiest place to find me.
Simon Huntley, we'll link you up in the show notes. So thanks very much for listening to the Gross Profit Podcast. If you got this far, well done. You got a gold star. You earned the right to like and subscribe and all that good stuff. If you have another entrepreneur like Simon you'd like me to interview, specifically around a finance struggles that they might have, you can email me at james.kennedy@procurementexpress.com, and we'll see you in the next one.